Welcome to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. Stay tuned for an analysis and conversation about the issues that matter most to you and your family. Here now with this week's edition of News in Focus is Chris Long.
And good afternoon and welcome to this edition of News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us. Of course, this week in Washington, Congress will be reconvening. While there is a government shutdown as we speak, the government shutdown is still going. And forget which day it is now of the government shutdown that President Trump is holding the line once that border wall funded. And he is not giving in to the Democrats who are politicizing the issue, quite honestly. The president has made a very strong case that the border wall and border security has been a marquee of his administration, and he is going to see that border security is a top issue as it continues in the Trump administration. And, of course, we do have issues with immigration in this country, with illegal immigrants flooding over the border in the last couple of decades, and it has created a host of problems. And much of which has been crime, as law enforcement is having to deal with illegals who have come across the border, some of them with ties to the drug and gang-related criminals who have come to this country and are wreaking havoc on the streets of America. And so that is what is on the president's mind, not to mention terrorism. Well, we're going to get into that in a number of issues, as we're going to have us with us Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District, who will be sworn in again to serve the people of the 6th Congressional District as the next Congress is signed into sworn into to serve the people of this country. Congressman Johnson, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Chris. How are you today?
Good, sir. And of course, let's see, is it tomorrow or this week?
It's tomorrow. Yep.
The swearing in
morning.
So this is a different role for you because you have experience serving in the majority, and now you'll be serving in the minority as the Democrats will take the gavel with Nancy Pelosi as presumably the next speaker of the House of Representatives. It will be divided government as the Republicans will retain control of the U.S. Senate, of course, the executive branch with President Trump, but the U.S. House of Representatives will be controlled by the Democrats and really by the political left. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, we're going to have to try and figure out a way to get the right things done for the American people. You know, Nancy Pelosi has already said that that she wants to reverse the tax cuts that President Trump signed into law and that House and Senate Republicans passed. She operates outside of the typical committee structure. She's already talking about setting up special select committees. If she does things the way she did when she was speaker before, hopefully she learned some things, Chris, but that remains to be seen. But if she does it the same way, she largely governs in a totalitarian type style. It comes directly from her office to the floor. There's not a lot of committee engagement. That's what happened with cap and trade. That's what happened with Obamacare. So that, I think, is what we've got to look forward to. And we've simply, you know, got to hold the line as much as we possibly can, realizing, of course, that the Democrats are going to control the House, and she can pass pretty much anything that she's capable of getting her members to sign off on. We're even hearing, and I'm sure you've probably heard this too, she's going to have her own set of problems. Representative Cortez, the new member from New York, has said she's not going to sign off and vote for Nancy Pelosi's rules package. And that rules package had a very similar measure in it, or has a very similar measure in it, that we had when we took over, Republicans took over back in 2011. It's called pay-as-you-go. That means if you have to, if you have legislation that costs money, then you're going to have cuts to match that in order to get that legislation across. And Cortez is leading a coalition of Democrats that aren't even sworn in yet to oppose that rules package, because, as you know, Cortez believes in Medicare for all, open borders, and socialistic principles, and that's not what America is. So Nancy Pelosi is going to have her hands full.
We are talking to Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio 6th District. Congressman, you're going to have a couple of new faces from the Ohio delegation that will be joining you. Jim Renacci, of course, will not be returning. He had a failed Senate bid against Sherrod Brown. He is retiring his seat. Anthony Gonzalez will be Republican, will be representing the 16th Congressional District. And then also in the 12th Congressional District, Pat Tiberi chose to retire. And that basically made way for Troy Boulderson, state senator who is now congressman from the 12th Congressional, will be joining you. Obviously, they are newbies to the system. They're going to be entering the fray as you're in the minority. You're going to be reaching out to them and helping them out, obviously, as they also represent their districts from Ohio.
Well, we did that during their elections. We helped them a lot when they were running, and of course now in an official capacity here, we have reached out to both of them. I see Troy Boulderson frequently because, you know, Troy actually was sworn in because he won that special election to fill the unexpired remaining part of Pat Tiberi's term. And so he's been here for a few months already. So he's not totally new, but we've been helping him make recommendations to get him staffed up and showing him the ropes. And we'll be doing the same thing with Anthony Gonzalez as well.
Very good. Congressman, obviously it's going to be a different role now. Of course, even as we've watched the football games over the weekend, there's offense and then there's defense. And when you root for your team that when they're on defense, not to give up yardage. So we're going to be rooting for you, obviously, as you play a defensive role against the liberal leftist agenda of Nancy Pelosi. And as you said, a more liberal wing of the Democratic Party that has come in and were elected. And they're going to be pushing for a number of things of which we've not seen in recent years, as the Republicans have had the majority. And of course, that means a lot of the agenda of pro-life, pro-family agenda will be derailed, unfortunately, in the U.S. House of Representatives. But there's going to be a narrative that builds. And of course, we've seen a number of investigative committees over the last few years. Jim Jordan and others were leading on these investigative committees of the FBI and the Justice Department. What will happen with the investigations at this point that were underway in the House of Representatives?
Well, that's a good question, and I think that remains to be seen. But you know what the news has been reporting, Chris? The Democrats are threatening even more investigations on the investigations, so to speak. So I don't know, but there is no doubt about it that the investigations will take a turn to the left, because Jim Jordan will not be holding the gavel on government oversight and reform. He's the ranking member there, just like on all of our committees. All of our committee chairmen will not be setting the agenda. It will be Nancy Pelosi's chairman that will be setting the agenda. So you're exactly right. I heard it said one time, Chris, when you're in the majority, you vote, you move legislation. When you're in the minority, you talk. And so a big part of our strategy is going to be messaging to the American people on the devastating consequences of some of these far left liberal policies that you're hearing so much about.
Well, we've had such a debate in this country over the last couple of years, and since President Trump was elected and the Republicans held both the House and the Senate, But there were 40 retirements of those who sat in chairman's positions on various committees and those who had been in Congress for some time. 40 Republicans chose to retire, which basically was throwing the House of Representatives, in the opinion of some, to the Democrats, because these were seats that now would have to be contested in primaries and then head off against the Democrats in the midterms, which normally favors the party of opposition. The Democrats picked up, 40 seats in the midterm?
Yeah, it was around there. It was a bigger number than we thought that they were going to pick up, that's for sure.
And, of course, there were a number of soft districts in places like California, New York, Illinois, and other areas where they were able to make some easy targets. Now, in Ohio, they didn't pick up a single seat. It came close with a 12th congressional and a special election. Troy Boulderson was not that well-known throughout the district. He's from Zanesville, Ohio. Seems like it would be of the dark side of the moon from people over in north of Columbus and Delaware area. But they did pull that out. There was a number of conservatives that stepped up into the campaign to make sure that that was retained. So that was the best chance the Democrats had of picking up a seat in Ohio. They did not gain any ground in Ohio. The Ohio elections actually went fairly well for Republicans. The only loss really was the U.S. Senate race, and that was because Josh Mandel had to pull out and Jim Renacci didn't have much of a time to actually make his case to the people of Ohio as the as a Republican senator. So Sherrod Brown retains that seat. Other than that, Republicans did very well on the statewide. But as we look in the congressional side of things, Bill, when you look at basically the war on coal, obviously you've worked on advancing the issues of coal and the coal miners and coal issues. We've had Mr. Murray on this program a number of times. What do you see happening for industry and business regulation and as it is in the energy sector in the new Congress?
A lot of rhetoric, a lot of political bantering. The reality is we have a majority in the Senate and we have a very pro-energy sector Republican base in the Senate. And you know where President Trump stands on all of this. So there'll be a lot of talk and posturing by Democrats in the House. But they're not going to be able to undo or go back to the days of the war on coal with Barack Obama.
The Senate, of course, is held by the Republicans, and they're already talking about continuing the investigations of the FBI and the Justice Department under Barack Obama, which actually had surveillance on a presidential candidate in 2016, and that was Donald J. Trump. And the House of Representatives actually rightfully began to investigate, calling for records from Rob Rosenstein and others that were involved in that basically what many consider to be almost a governmental coup against a Republican candidate running for office. I still am, it's hard to imagine, wrap your head around it. I hate to see that that's going to be dismissed, but obviously those that are coming in on the Democratic side, they're going to dismiss all of that. And as you said, they're now going to turn the guns on the investigators, meaning those who were asking the questions. And quite honestly, when we look at Peter Strzok and you look at Lisa Page and a number of those in the Justice Department that were discredited and basically shamed because when facts came to truth and to the public, they realized what was going on here. And they were very concerned about what might be happening on the Senate side of a continuation of these investigations.
Well, as you well know, nobody tells the Senate what to do. I mean, if we could tell the Senate what to do, we'd be moving a lot more legislation over the last 8 years than we've been able to. So I'm not even going to speculate as to what will happen in the Senate. I hope that, as you said, that they will continue to dig into the inappropriate and perhaps even criminal conduct by some of the presidential appointees in the Justice Department and the FBI. But clearly in the House, that's not what's going to be talked about for the next 2 years. That's going to be muted by the agenda that Nancy Pelosi and her colleagues set out. And we'll have to see what that is. Now, you know, I don't want to paint a picture of all gloom and doom, even though, you know, nobody's more disappointed than I am. I share the disappointment that control of the House tomorrow will flip to the Democrats. But I can tell you that it is possible to do things that benefit the American people. I mean, I had 7 bills that were signed into law during Barack Obama's tenure. It is possible to reach out across the aisle and find common ground. I know that Nancy Pelosi and President Trump have talked about trying to find common ground on reducing the cost of prescription drugs, on infrastructure projects. Those are areas that our district, my district, could benefit greatly from. So I'm certainly interested in engaging in those discussions. But the high profile Justice Department FBI investigations that you've seen led predominantly by the House for the last 4 years, those are going to be put on the back burner because Nancy Pelosi is going to be driving the train.
We're talking with Bill Johnson, Congressman from Ohio's 6th District. Congressman, I know we just have a few minutes left as you have to get going. And, of course, the swearing-in ceremonies will be taking place tomorrow. And leadership will be officially changing hand as the gavel will be passed off. We'll be praying for you and all the members of Congress as they come in and take their oath of office to serve the American people for sure. What is your thoughts on the president's announcement of troop withdrawal from Syria? What is your thoughts on that?
I was initially surprised by that, by just like everyone else was. But I'm sure that you saw Senator Lindsey Graham's interview over the weekend or over the holidays. He actually met with the president. Senator Graham was one of the most outspoken opponents of the president's announcement that he was withdrawing from Syria. Senator Graham, without going into specifics, said that he learned a lot of things about Syria that he did not know, and that he now has a much more comfortable feeling.
Okay.
The president has a plan, and that that he is executing on that plan. You know, the president made some promises, Chris, during his campaign. He said he was going to kill ISIS and annihilate them and remove them from the world. Lindsey Graham says that we haven't accomplished that yet, but we're within the 10-yard line. We're in the red zone, to coin a football phrase. And so he's confident that that the president is going to keep that promise. The other promise that the president made was to bring our troops home. You know, we're not the policemen of the world. And I think it bears talking about. I think the president has made an assertion that we need to consider. I mean, does it make sense for America to essentially be in a prolonged, protracted proxy war with Russian-backed forces when it's not necessarily in our national security interest to do so? We never intended to get deeply embroiled in Syria's civil war. I spoke out strongly against that when Barack Obama started to simply meddle in the situation. We either needed to take decisive action, for example, going after their use of chemical weapons on their own people, or we needed to stay out of it altogether. And so I'm willing to listen to what the president has to say, but after hearing what Lindsey Graham said, I'm a little bit more comfortable. I must confess to you, I wasn't a part of the decision process. I'm a little bit disappointed that we're losing General Mattis as our Secretary of Defense, because I thought he was the right guy at the right time. But the general did the right thing. If he disagrees with the president's agenda, he needs to step aside if he can't support what the commander-in-chief wants to do.
Oh, thank you, Congressman. I appreciate those thoughts. Again, when you think about it, we're $21 trillion in debt, and we're looking at staring down the barrel of really a lot of problems as far as financially. And as you said, many are beginning to believe we can't be the policemen of the world, and we have to start prioritizing our military. And the president has announced that as far as China's aggression in the South China Sea, and of course, Russia. And you can't just be everywhere in these places like Syria and Afghanistan and other places. You know, somebody said, who won the war on terror? And there's an article that said China did, because they didn't have to lift a finger. And they've been building up their military and their expansion across the globe while we've been expending a lot of treasure, blood, sweat, and tears on the war on terror. So now 17 years later, we're going to have to reset and reassess, and that's what President Trump is doing. And I do think that people need to be open-minded on the subject. Congressman, thank you so much for joining us today, and we'll be praying for you, sir, as you serve us in the 116th Congress, and we'll be praying for you and your family as you serve the American people.
Well, thank you very much, Chris. God bless, and God bless your listeners. God bless the great state of Ohio and the United States. I look forward to serving again and talking to you soon.
Absolutely. Thank you, Congressman. We appreciate you very much.
Bye-bye.
That's Congressman Bill Johnson of Ohio's 6th District, and that runs along the Ohio River all the way down to Marietta. And, of course, he is serving another term in what is going to be the 116th. Congress will be seated tomorrow as the gavel will be passed back to the Democrats from the Republicans, as the Democrats picked up 40 seats and took the majority. But there's going to be a narrative, and there's going to be a battle for debate over the next 2 years, as we're going to have divided government between the U.S. House of Representatives, the U.S. Senate, and the executive, as Republicans control the presidency with President Donald J. Trump and the U.S. Senate in a majority. And of course, the Senate does not need the U.S. House of Representatives to confirm federal judges. That will continue, and appointments as well. Many of President Trump's appointments have been languishing for 24 months while the Democrats have stalled these appointments. And Mitch McConnell, the president of the Senate, has pledged that he's going to move these appointees along. And it's really just a shame, because when President Barack Obama was sworn in, the Republicans quickly confirmed his appointments. They thought the newly elected president deserves his cabinet, his appointees. The Democrats have not been playing fair. They've been obstructing. They've been doing everything to stall and obstruct President Trump from getting his full complement of appointees throughout government. And we need to pray for the president. We need to pray for the Congress. We need to pray for our country. And, you know, this is important. And if you missed any of today's program with the interview with Congressman Johnson, you can always listen to it on our website at ohioca.org, or just Google Ohio Christian Alliance. You can also see us on Facebook and on Twitter and on LinkedIn. And we hope that you will continue. We're going to have, on the second part of the program, Greg Lawson from the Buckeye Institute will be joining us. We'll be talking about Ohio policy as Governor-elect Mike DeWine will be sworn into office in another week or so, or 10 days. And he's going to continue taking Ohio into the future with a new legislature and statewide office holders. And we'll be talking about that in policy and some of the challenges that Ohio is facing economically here in the next year or so. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after these messages, and we'll be talking to Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute. Thanks for listening.
Looking out for seniors today. It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 plus Association.
I'm Johnette Cruz, and I'm a busy mom. Then a friend told me about TrustBlueReview.com, a new website powered by the Christian Blue Network. She uses it to find trusted Christian-owned businesses. I checked it out, read the helpful reviews, and found a great family dentist. Now I use TrustBlueReview for all my family's needs. For peace of mind, do what I did. Visit TrustBlueReview.com or download their free mobile app from your app store today.
The trusted source for all you do, TrustBlueReview.
Will my kids like this dentist? Can I trust this mechanic? Who's a good choice for my upcoming remodel? I found businesses I can trust from TrustBlueReview.com.
This company rebuilt our deck and renovated our bathroom. I'd highly recommend them to anyone looking to hire an honest contractor.
The best dentist experience I've ever had.
It's now easy to find trusted businesses in my community that have the same Christian values as my family. It all starts at TrustBlueReview.com or download their app in the App Store today.
The trusted source for all you do.
And welcome back to News in Focus. We're glad that you've joined us this afternoon. With me on the phone is Greg Lawson. He is research fellow at the Buckeye Institute. The Buckeye Institute is a policy conservative think tank here in the state of Ohio, much like the Heritage Foundation on the federal level. They work on free market solutions and Ohio's challenges. Greg has been with the Buckeye Institute for a few years. They work the Ohio legislature and presenting information as resource researchers to the Ohio legislature on a number of issues. And we're going to talk about the incoming statewide office holders and the challenges they face with Ohio's economy going into 2019 and beyond. Greg, welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you so much for having me, Chris. I really appreciate the opportunity to talk to you about these interesting times we live in.
Absolutely, and Happy New Year to you and your family, my friend.
Thank you, and you as well.
Well, obviously, the election, the midterms are over, wrapped up here in Ohio. Ohio did very well as far as Republicans are concerned. Governor Mike DeWine is our next governor. He'll be sworn in here in about 10 days, along with John Husted, our current Secretary of State, will be his lieutenant governor. And then Frank LaRose will be the new Secretary of State. Dave Yost, who is our auditor, a Republican, will be our Attorney General. Robert Sprague will be the treasurer, and then, of course, Keith Faber will be the state auditor. The Ohio legislature is, again, controlled by Republicans in both the Ohio House and the Ohio Senate. And so the Ohio is held in Republicans' hands. The Republicans did fairly well here in the midterms. And so moving forward, though, as Governor Kasich basically ends his term in office, not without some controversy, without question, in the lame duck session, there were some veto overrides of some legislation. The legislature wanted to make some distinction between them and the governor's opinion on a number of issues. Of course, the pro-life issue of the heartbeat bill was nearly overridden by the Ohio legislature, just short by one vote. We could talk about that as Governor-elect Mike DeWine has pledged to sign the heartbeat bill, so it looked as if it will be moving in the first 6 months of the next General Assembly. But I want to also focus on Ohio's economy because there are some troubling signs as we go forward. And you spoke to me with the phone this afternoon. We talked about something that I wasn't aware of, and that was the Highway Commission, of course, the Turnpike Commission, and the deal that the Governor Kasich arranged that provided funding for roads and bridges and construction Ohio, but that money's now gone. Explain that to our listeners.
Yeah, what happened essentially is that when Governor Kasich came into office, there was a very large backlog of highway projects in Ohio. They were simply running low on funding. The major source of funding here in Ohio is the gasoline tax, the state tax. There's actually two different taxes, major government taxes, on the gas you get at the pump.
How much is that right now per gallon, a state tax?
The state one is 28 cents.
28 cents. We are paying 28 cents a gallon in tax, state tax. Okay. I didn't even know that. So it's 28 cents a gallon.
And what has happened is that's actually, and so the last time this was raised was back in 2003, and it was done at the time to of course get more resources for roads, bridges, because there's a distribution mechanism. The Ohio Department of Transportation gets a lot of it, but there's also money that goes to county engineers who work and are responsible for county roads. It also goes.
And may I ask, how much does the state gas tax raise annually for a road construction and these other projects? How much annually?
It raises quite a bit. I don't have the number right at the tip of my tongue here, it raises a lot. I mean, it's the major source of revenue for all the highways that we do here in Ohio. And so it is extremely significant relative to that. So what they actually had done was, though, because of a variety of issues that happened when the governor was Governor Kasich was first coming into office, is those revenues weren't keeping track with what was perceived to be the needs of maintaining the roads, making sure in some of the areas like Central Ohio in particular, where there's a lot of population growth, you need to also expand some of the highways. It's one of our advantages in Ohio economically, is we have an extremely large highway system. We have one of the top, I think it's like the sixth or seventh largest highway system in the country, actually crisscrossing Ohio, and that's extremely important in terms of moving products and goods. We're very close. Ohio is very close to the eastern seaboard and a very large percentage of the American population when you think about Chicago to our west, and again, New York City and up and down the coast. So having highways has always been considered really an important piece of having a good economy, because you're moving product, not just stuff from Ohio, but products that transit through Ohio to get to other areas. And so having that work it has always been important. So the revenues that were low, or coming in lower to keep up with all of that, was already something that was a problem. The governor, Kasich, decided that we needed to do something about that. He looked at a number of different options and to get additional resources. And the option that was selected was to issue bonds on the Ohio Turnpike. And so you get a lump sum of money when you issue these bonds. And then, of course, you pay the bonds back over time. In this case, the bonds were backed by the toll revenue. Ohio really only has, many states have a lot more toll roads than Ohio does. We have the Ohio Turnpike, obviously, up north. And so it's an extremely important thing. It gets a ton of traffic from people going from Pennsylvania through and back and forth from Indiana and Pennsylvania. But they ended up saying, okay, we're going to get a big lump sum of cash that we can use to inject into the budget, like I was just describing, and then we will have the fees, the turnpike fees would then be tolls, would be backing that up and paying off the debt over the long run. So you basically get a lot of money up front, and you pay it off over a long period of time. So we got all the upfront money, and most of that's been programmed with projects throughout the state, but a lot of that money is starting to run out, basically. So we're starting to revert back to a situation somewhat similar to that which was faced when Governor Kasich was first coming into office. And this gets to the fundamental challenge of how you fund roads. People don't think about that a lot. But roads, again, are the lifeblood of a lot of economic activity. And somehow you have to pay for them. And the gas tax has historically been seen as what would be considered a user fee. It's not quite like a toll, which is literally you pay when you get on and get off the highway, like at the turnpike. But historically, gas tax has been kind of close to that, at least in Ohio, because in Ohio, we actually have a state constitutional provision that protects the revenue raised from the state gas tax from being siphoned off into other purposes. It has to basically go back into the construction of roads.
I need to ask a question at this point, Greg, and because the sale of the Ohio Turnpike, which is you know, obviously a very important commodity of the state of Ohio. The people of Ohio built the Ohio Turnpike. They paid for it. And then Governor Kasich sought, he gave them, what is it, a 100-year lease or something? It basically all but sold it, right?
No, this is a little different. That has been done in other states, actually, where there was large leases. For example, Indiana did, in fact, do a process very similar to what you're just describing when Governor Mitch Daniels was in there, and they got a lump sum of money that they used, kind of like how we did it. But in this case, what the governor did is he sold bonds that were backed by the fees, the tolls,
right.
But the ownership is totally retained by the state, and the state still actually manages the turnpike in Indiana, for example.
But I don't understand the money exchange though. So the money's gone Governor DeWine is coming in with the money gone of the deal that Governor Kasich did to get money for roads and bridges and construction. That money is gone, and so Governor DeWine is coming in at a time where he's staring down a lot more infrastructure improvements that need to be done in this state. And then now the question is, how will it be funded? I think that's a fair statement.
Well, no, that's a big question. And that's actually a question whether it has to be looked at increasing the gas tax. I'm sure there's going to be a significant amount of discussion on that. There's going to be a discussion also on alternative ways to raise revenue that's aside from the gas tax. There are other states have experimented with a number of things. For example, there are some states that have done what's called a vehicle mile travel tax, which is literally you don't necessarily pay the gas tax, but you pay a fee per mile. Now, this gets into it. There's a whole kind of a Pandora's box, really, of issues that are associated with that.
We're going to have you back on and talk about that issue because I think that is going to become a real issue of raising the gas tax, and that's not a popular item with a lot of people. We will say this in closing. I'm looking at the chart right now. According to the 2018 figures, Michigan pays 44.13%, 44 cents a gallon. Indiana, 42 cents. PA pays 58 cents a gallon in tax. And Ohio's is basically 28 cents a gallon. Kentucky is the only bordering state that's lower at 26 cents a gallon of tax for roads and bridges. Well, we'll get back to that because we want to move on. We got a lot of ground to cover here. Again, we're talking with Greg Lawson, Senior Fellow of Research at the Buckeye Institute, again, a conservative think tank that does a lot of fine research and policy work at the Ohio State House, helping the Ohio legislature to understand by the numbers where we are on a number of economic issues in Ohio. Greg, let's move on because I had Mr. Murray on this program a few weeks ago, and he basically was warning that the Ohio is facing 100,000 job losses in the Ohio Valley in the energy sector if the scheduled plant closings continue for First Energy, and that is basically those coal-fired generator plants along the Ohio River. And I don't know if he was incorporating or including the two nuclear plants of Perry and Betsy Davis. Those two nuclear plants are scheduled to close as well. They are in the First Energy repertoire of power generators, and that's not even mentioning Lordstown. So Governor DeWine is going to be facing a potential lot of job loss or layoffs, and I just talked to someone from First Energy today, and they said there's no change. Those plants are still scheduled to close. This is going to be a major problem. This is a wall coming at us at 90 miles an hour here in Ohio. And of course, we're not even talking about Lordstown. GM's talking about closing Lordstown. You're talking about a lot of job loss. Your thoughts on that?
No, I think that we are facing, I think I used the phrase when we were chatting earlier today, that we are facing gathering storm clouds and headwinds that are starting to potentially blow in the face of Ohio's economy. And certainly each one of the issues that you just raised, electrical plants are a huge issue. They're a huge job creator. They are also very important for raising revenues in the school districts that they're housed in, that they reside in. So there's a lot of reverberations and other effects if things like that shut down. So you've got the job loss, you've got losses of revenue to different institutions that way. That has also other job implications too, usually on the negative side of things. Lordstown is obviously a massive issue. And I think that this is, we've had a pretty good run of job growth. In fact, last year, the year that we just completed, was one of the better years Ohio has had in a long time for job growth. But that doesn't, but we still actually trail the national average, which is a long-standing problem in Ohio. In other words, even when we're creating jobs, we tend to create fewer jobs percentage-wise than other states do, and certainly the national average. And now with these things that are not entirely unique to Ohio, but the kind of confluence of these things coming together is sort of unique to Ohio. And that's a real problem because this is potentially, tens of thousands of jobs over time is going to happen with the combination of all these things. And so we're trying to figure out, and I don't think there's any silver bullet responses to this, but the DeWine administration certainly needs to come in with their eyes wide open as to the potential, these headwinds that are coming, because we'll see. There's a lot of things that can happen with the energy plants in ways to moderate and deal with some of the pricing issues that are associated with, like, coal, for example. You probably talked with Mr. Murray about that.
Yes.
There's a lot of discussion. It's a bit of a technical issue, but has a lot to do with having different resources that are available to put energy onto the electric grid. And there's been some discussions with the grid operator here in Ohio that, well, not just in Ohio, it's actually, we're part of a larger grid structure to try to have different pricing mechanisms in order to compensate companies for being able to put electricity and have secure mechanism of raising that energy and getting it onto the grid so that if we have another one of these polar vortexes where everything gets really cold and the whole region gets cold and there's a supply disruption, there's a whole host of things that have to happen there. That could have some impact. I don't know how fast that's going to happen. A lot of that is going to be done through how PJM operates things. There's some stuff at the national level with the Trump administration trying to look at how do we keep energy available. And that's going to be a critical discussion. But whatever happens with that, Ohio has a problem with getting people ready for future jobs, too. We have to be able to be prepared to get people, if the worst-case scenarios happen here with things like Lordstown and with the different first energy plants, we're going to have to figure out, what do you do? You can't just have these folks going out and being on unemployment in perpetuity. You're going to have to figure out how to get these folks back into a meaningful job that pays them an appropriate wage for the skill sets they have, and or at least can get them a skill that they need to transition to something else. And this is something Ohio has not done well at. Governor Kasich has tried to do it. I know this is actually a particular focus for the incoming DeWine administration.
Yes, it is.
You've got apprenticeships. Ohio needs to get back to apprenticeships. We need to get back to, we've taken
trades programs in high schools, because you have a lot of retirements that are coming in the trade services of electricians, plumbers, welders, machinists. An army of people are about ready to retire.
Those are well-compensated jobs.
That's
a critical thing. We've done a very poor job. Now, this is not just an Ohio issue. It's kind of a national issue, but I think it's particularly acute here in Ohio because of the challenges I mentioned before with the jobs and the headwinds and everything else, is that we have always told everybody, no, you got to go to a four-year, college and university and get a four-year degree, and that's the ticket to success. Well, you can get a trade and be a welder and make 70, maybe even 80, but probably in the 70s, almost right out of high school, and do it with very limited, if any, debt whatsoever. And you're hearing the nightmare stories of kids going to college and incurring, $20,000-$30,000 worth of debt. That's ridiculous. We got to get people out where they can get home quickly, get married, have kids, do things like that. And right now, a lot of young people are delaying all of those things, which are positive for your economy in the long run, too, because they're in debt from going to a four-year degree, getting a four-year degree that isn't paying for itself, basically. We've got to get back to that. That is a discussion that I know the DeWine administration is going to have. It's a discussion we're looking at, too, is trying to, what are the right programs and what are the right relationships between employers, the government, and like community colleges and the career and tech centers.
Even high school, because you have College Credit Plus programs, basically of students who are taking college-level courses in high school for credits for college. But what about those who want to not go to college but want to go to a trades program? So we're going to talk more about that on future programs. Greg, we'll have you back on because we're going to be pushing for that for a trades programs at the high school level. And I think the new administration is very interested in that. That's Governor Mike DeWine has been talking about that. We've about run out of time. How do people contact the Buckeye Institute?
Yeah, please visit our website, simply buckeyeinstitute.org. All of our latest work is on there. And, you know, we're going to be looking at the state budget. We're going to keep looking at these job issues and how we can get people employed faster. But again, all of our information is on buckeyeinstitute.org. And we're happy. My contact info is on the website as well. And I'm always happy to answer any questions that folks have. There's a lot of stuff we have to do here to get Ohio back on track.
Absolutely. Well, thank you, my friend, for joining us today. Again, Greg Lawson of the Buckeye Institute, and we'll be seeing you in Columbus real shortly. Thanks, Greg.
Thank you, sir.
God bless. We'll be right back after these messages. Don't go away. We have some closing thoughts.
Who's looking out for seniors today? It's not the AARP. AARP worked overtime to help pass Obamacare, the legislation that cut over $700 billion from Medicare. And AARP supports the death tax, which can rob families of over half their savings due to the death of a loved one. Seniors know that AARP would rather make millions peddling insurance products than support the policies that actually help America's elderly. That's why America's seniors count on the 60 Plus Association. For more than 20 years, 60 Plus has been fighting for the seniors that AARP has left behind. 60 Plus fought against Obamacare and continues to fight every day for its repeal in Washington. And 60 Plus is the leading national organization working to repeal the death tax once and for all so that families can pass down their businesses and farms to the next generation, not the IRS. Stand up for your values. Join 60 Plus today. Visit 60plus.org or call 703-807-2070. This message paid for and authorized by the 60 Plus Association.
Well, it is the 50th anniversary of Apollo 8. Apollo 8, of course, gave that famed message on Christmas Eve of 1968. It was the first time in which the space program orbited the moon, and we saw an Earthrise. They were, of course, the preliminary project to what would be Apollo 11, which would eventually land on the moon in July of 1969. On that famed flight, of course, was Frank Borman, James Lovell, and William Anders, who read from the scriptures from the book of Genesis as they gave their Christmas message from Apollo 8 as they orbited the moon. Of course, we also hear news that China is about to land an unmanned vehicle on the dark side of the moon today, and it'll be the first time that another nation outside of the United States has conducted these kinds of operations on the moon. During the Obama administration, the space program really became derailed. He unplugged the moon project. We were heading back to the moon. I actually have friends who were working on the project with NASA in Houston, and he basically is a rocket scientist. He was working with a jet propulsion system to bring America back to the moon, but the Obama administration pulled the plug on that. President Trump has announced that he wanted to see us advance in the space program. We have yet to hear any major announcements from that. Obviously, there's a lot of private groups that are working on various space projects and, of course, the Mars project. But we're going to close today's program with that announcement from Apollo 8 as they spoke to the residents on Earth from space as they were orbiting the moon on Christmas Eve, 1968.
I hope that all of you back on Earth can see what we mean when we say it's a rather foreboding horizon, a rather dark and unappetizing looking place. We're now going over, approaching one of our future landing sites, selected in this moon region to call the Sea of Tranquility, smooth in order to make it easy for the initial landing attempt, in order to preclude having to dodge mountains. Now you can see the long shadows of the lunar sunrise. approaching lunar sunrise, and for all the people back on Earth, the crew of Apollo 8 has a message that we would like to send to you. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth, and the earth was without form and void, and darkness was upon the face of the deep. And the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. And God said, let there be light. And there was light. And God saw the light, that it was good. God divided the light from the darkness.
And God called the light day, and the darkness he called night. And the evening and the morning were the first day. And God said, let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. And God made the firmament, and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so. And God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day.
And God said, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, and let the dry land appear, and it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters called he seas. And God saw that it was good. And from the crew of Apollo 8, we close with good night, good luck, a Merry Christmas, and God bless all of you. All of you on the good earth.
You have been listening to News in Focus with your host, Chris Long, President of the Ohio Christian Alliance. To learn more about the issues that matter most to you and your family, visit online at ohioca.org. That's ohioca.org. Thank you for listening. This program is sponsored by the Ohio Christian Alliance of Akron, Ohio.